Hello and welcome to Popcorn Optional, a movie podcast where we talk about basically all things movies and really whatever else we want to talk about. I'm not Cameron Slanina, our usual host. He is out this week. My name is Jake Brown, and I'm joined by my co-host, Trevor Allison. Trevor, what's up?
Good to be here. I feel like we can do whatever we want, because this is kind of Cam's thing, so look out.
Well, you know what they say. When Anne's away, the mice get perms.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
We have some quick movie news to cover, but then we're just going to hop right into our review this week of Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom, which blew it up at the box office this week.
Oh, my goodness.
I was surprised by how crazy the box office was. My theater was basically sold out, and every showing that day was basically sold out. I think I got the last not front row ticket at my theater.
Yeah, there were some people who were, I don't know, maybe late 20s, early 30s, who felt such the need to see this film at 11 a.m. on a Saturday that they brought their, like, six-week-old baby with them.
And, you know, this is not a kid-friendly movie. They should have gone to Incredibles 2.
Well, even with the... it's just a little loud, if nothing else,
yeah,
for a six-week-old.
A lot of things going on. Well, let's just hop into the news real quick. Big news that's happening right now is Star Wars World. Basically, what this breaks down to is Kathleen Kennedy is making all of the money because she produced the first Jurassic Park and is now in charge of Star Wars. So that's our news segment for the evening. No, just kidding. Lucasfilm/Disney has announced that they are putting a hold on all of the Star Wars story films. Those are the Rogue One, the Solos, basically the spinoff films that aren't the original trilogy story saga thing. And this is a big deal. Trevor, what's your reaction to this?
Yeah, I didn't really know what to say when I first heard this. I didn't know what my reaction was. As I've had time to process this, I think that more than anything else, this is maybe a ploy to put some shareholders and or board members at ease about losing money on Solo. Disney is not full of dumb people, and Kathleen Kennedy is not dumb, and they know that even though Solo they lost money on, that if they wait a few years and get Ewan McGregor for an Obi-Wan Kenobi movie, that it's going to make $1 billion. So yeah. I mean, I'm not necessarily worried. I think that we're going to see some delays because of this, and you know, it would be convenient for them to be able to announce this if they, you know, say couldn't get Ewan McGregor for at least 3 years. So maybe this whole thing works in their favor anyway. It is interesting because we kind of just thought this Disney train with Star Wars was going to chug along and throw a movie out every year no matter what. And since it's not, it doesn't seem like it's going to now, but I don't think Star Wars stories are dead.
What's weird is that like Disney has almost scheduled themselves like out of the movie release calendar with the amount of big properties and films that they have coming out on a consistent basis. Like people are tired of seeing big spectacle films, which is something that we'll talk about later. But I'm not surprised that they're kind of slowing down the release. A Star Wars film every 6 months is a little much. And especially when you've got Marvel films coming out, Jurassic Park films coming out, Pixar films coming out. There's just so many big, big franchise, big spectacle, big fun action-packed films coming out to the theater right now, most of which are owned by Disney. And also, most of those have made a butt ton of money. So, like, no offense, Disney, you can take a loss and it's not that big of a deal, but I think they're just concerned that they're taking a loss on Star Wars, which I think everybody thought was the safest bet or like the safest investment they could possibly make. But you know, consumers know what they want. Moviegoers know what they want. They don't want to see the same thing over and over again every weekend at the box office. And that kind of feels like what we've been getting. I still haven't seen Solo, so I can't really say in particular if I think it's the right move or whatever. I mean, you can weigh in more on that, but I'm not so much concerned as I think, like, just give us one Star Wars movie, like, every year and a half. We don't need one every 6 months.
Yeah, I don't entirely understand why people aren't going to see it. I haven't really been able to put my finger on a good reason. I think it's good. I think it was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it. I think I like it more than most people that I've heard from, though, so whatever that's worth. I don't know. I fully believe that if they hadn't already spent so much money on this with reshooting 75% of the movie, that they would have pushed this back to December and done a little bit more work on it, but I don't think they wanted to spend any more.
Yeah, I think what happened was just the controversy became a big part of the marketing, whether they wanted it to or not, just the PR that was happening around the film that was entering like mainstream, not just like weird movie news nerddom that we live in. Like normal people knew about that.
Right.
And then The Last Jedi was controversial for silly reasons. And so people, I think, were just like, you know what? I'm just going to skip this one. The Incredibles comes out next week. Like it's a crazy schedule this year at the box office. And so I don't blame people for skipping out. I also think Rogue One is not good. So like I don't have a ton of interest in the Star Wars stories films. But you know, Star Wars, so I'll see it. I'm just too busy to see it. But yeah, I mean, it's an interesting piece of news. I'm interested to see what they do, if they're going to scrap those projects or just shelve them for now and kind of see what happens with episode 9, which honestly I think is the right decision.
Sure. Yeah. And episode 9, you know, is going to be Return of the Jedi in J.J. Abrams form. So everyone's going to be happy again.
Yeah. The biggest crowd pleaser of them all is J.J. Abrams. But that gets to our second story on Star Wars, talking about a crowd pleasing. The Last Jedi was not a crowd pleaser. I think it made a lot of people mad for good reasons. I personally loved The Last Jedi and think it took the franchise in a direction that it very much needed to go. But a lot of people want their Luke Skywalker to be cool and edgy, and he gets the girl. And he was not that. And so people were upset. And so now there is this group of indie film producers and directors and filmmakers that claim that they have $200 million in financing to remake Star Wars The Last Jedi.
Well, I went to their website, remakethelastjedi.com, earlier today, and there's a tracker on there that says they have $153 million pledged towards this project. So
I'ma call bullshit real quick. Let me
that's a lot of money.
There's no way.
That's a lot of money.
There is no way they've gotten that much money. Like $153 million can like cure AIDS. What are we doing?
Right? Yeah. that would make it if people have actually somehow arranged this funding, which they haven't, that would be the tied for the 38th largest movie budget of all time.
Yeah, like that's a ton of money. Also,
for something that the people that are making don't have the intellectual property rights to.
Yeah, that's your first hurdle. you can't even make it. So I don't care how much money you have. Disney paid $4 billion for it. So unless you get that much money, they're not going to get it.
And also, it's now worth at least $50
billion. Oh, yeah. There's no freaking way they're going to let this happen. Also, you think if they were able to raise $150 million, they would be able to make a better looking website. My God, this is terrible. This is a very bad website.
Yeah. My favorite thing is the people like Rian Johnson who are cheering this on and really want to see it happen.
Yeah, I think I'm okay. So here's the thing. I would actually be really interested to see this movie.
Oh,
because
man.
People don't realize how hard it is to make a movie and how hard it is to make a good movie. And just because a movie makes you uncomfortable or challenges your expectations doesn't mean it's bad. It means that maybe you need to like check yourself and figure out, why did that like rub me the wrong way? Oh, because I already had an entire movie written in my head before I went to go see this one. Like The Last Jedi is fantastic. It's so good, so smart. There are some bumps. There are some hiccups that I was like, not a big fan of this. What's going on here? But overall, it is a fantastic film. And I would just love to see these people try and make something even remotely as good as Attack of the Clones.
Right? Or even, I mean, if they made something as pretty as Last Jedi, I would be impressed.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's beautiful.
Oh, my gosh.
It's absolutely beautiful.
So well done. Like, technically, so good. This is ridiculous.
If you want to know what these guys are up to, get on the Twitter, @RMTheLastJedi. They have a pretty hilarious conversation with Seth Rogen that you can see from a few days ago. And it's just, this is something else. I love it. I love people's ridiculousness. So make this movie,
you have to,
please.
You have to remember that it's a pretty amazing world that we live in, that like stuff like this could possibly happen. Like, thank you, the internet, for giving us this even possibility. But also at the same time, we might be living in the darkest timeline. So there's a lot of, things going on.
I really want this to happen and to do it without the intellectual property rights. So it's like a Tobias Fünke kind of thing, mm-hmm. where it's like, oh yeah, Larry Sky Surfer is a Jundu.
that would be fantastic. That's basically what this is going to have to be. It's going to be like Han Duo walks across the ship and talks to Lance Sky Smalker. And
but shot on a red, because what else do you do with the money?
That's a good point. That's a good point. Okay, well, we've spent too much time on that.
Ooh.
What is happening? Okay, so since Cameron's not here, we're not going to do any big segments or anything. Instead, we're just going to give Trevor a little bit of time to rant his thoughts about Jurassic World, because he saw Jurassic World for the first time about a week or two ago in preparation for Fallen Kingdom. And I'm really intrigued to hear your thoughts, Trevor, because I feel like I have similar thoughts, but I was misled by my theater experience. So the floor is yours, my friend.
Yeah. So I watched this at home. So that's
first mistake.
That's right. So that's first thing. Huge movie, huge dinosaurs. You got to see it on the big screen, right? But Jurassic World is just awful. It's one of the worst movies I've ever seen, especially compared to the amount of money that's spent on it and Chris Pratt being in it. Come on now. It looks awful. It's not very pretty. It's lit poorly in several scenes. I don't care about the kids. They're a blatant ripoff and bad version of the Spielberg kids in Jurassic Park. This is basically like if The Force Awakens had been terrible. It's so similar to the original, and it's a reboot, and it doesn't work. I don't care about the kids. I don't care about Bryce Dallas Howard. Chris Pratt is doing the worst acting I've ever seen him doing. He lives in a very cliche trailer and drives a very cliche motorcycle. It's just not interesting. He also rides that motorcycle through the jungle on a not, there's not a path there. I don't understand. There's this, I don't want to give too much away, but just go see this, whatever. The romantic moment between these two main characters is the least earned romantic moment of all time. There is literally no lead up to it whatsoever. It's the, we might as well die, so let's kiss each other before we start shooting the dinosaurs. It's absolutely ridiculous. Also, I have a big problem when the dinosaurs go crazy of the pterodactyls just randomly attacking people. They've never seen people before, or if they have, it's on a very limited basis. Why would they just start attacking this mass of creatures? That's not how rational animals, or how any animals behave. And animals are incredibly, you know, self-preservation in their thought processes. So you see a giant group of organisms you've never encountered before, and you just start attacking them at random. Seems completely, just completely ridiculous to me, this whole thing. Also, like, how are we going to jump 25 years in time? We had a terrible experience with Jurassic Park. We learned all of our lessons. Ian Malcolm told us over and over again, this is a bad idea. We learned it was a bad idea the hard way. People got their heads bit off. People got eaten while they were on the toilet. All kinds of awful things happen. And so suddenly, inexplicably, 20 years later, we built it, but bigger and better and more dangerous. What the heck is going on here? And then this guy, the billionaire guy, I don't know what his name is, but he's not John Hammond. He doesn't work for Engine. He just, I mean, I guess he sort of does, but like, what is going on here? This is just, it's just a complete mess. It's just an awful, awful movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that basically sums it up, and we're not going to give it away too much. There's redeeming things. Like, it is entertaining. It is, like, there's dinosaurs, and so I understand why it's such a crowd pleaser, but it definitely was a misstep in terms of bringing back the franchise. I think there is a YouTuber named Patrick H. Williams. I think that's his name. And he has this in-depth video essay about what's wrong with the Jurassic Park sequels. And one thing that he talks about with Jurassic World is that the defining moment that he knew that there was something wrong with this film is in the original Jurassic Park, you have the big swell of the music when you see the dinosaurs for the first time. You have the big swell of the music when you see the island for the first time. And in Jurassic World, the big swells of the music are when you see the park for the first time.
Uh-huh.
And it was an immediate recognition of like, oh no, they don't get it. They don't like right. The filmmakers don't understand what made Jurassic Park so great.
Yeah.
And it basically just it's like you said, it's like if The Force Awakens was terrible. If The Force Awakens was terrible, that means The Last Jedi is going to be terrible. Like, there was no hope for Attack of the Clones when Phantom Menace was as bad as it was. So it really put the franchise in a really tough position, and Fallen Kingdom was given a bad hand to play with.
And not only that, but it's not like you could distance yourself from it because Colin Trevorrow right. is pretty much in charge of this thing.
Which that's your big mistake. Universal, what the heck are you doing? So I think we've talked enough about Jurassic World. I think we both think it is it's a letdown. I'll be honest, when I first saw Jurassic World and my theater experience, it was really similar to like The Dark Knight Rises. It was a ton of excitement and hype that I think clouded my original viewing. But after I thought about it, it sucked like super hard. And that's kind of how I have with Jurassic World of like, you're in the theater for the first time. I mean, it's Chris Pratt on a motorcycle with velociraptors, and it's the music, and it's Jurassic Park. It's dinosaurs on the big screen, and you've got the score of John Williams. And it's just like, yes, Jurassic Park is back. T-Rexes. And then like 2 days later, you're like, God, that was a hot piece of garbage.
The big thing I think about is like, why were the kids in it again? What were they for?
Why were so many things in it? So many mistakes. So many things. Do you have any other thoughts, or should we get to
Fallen
Kingdom?
Let's get into Fallen Kingdom.
Okay. Trevor, what are your overall thoughts?
Okay, so I hated it in the theater. I just walked out and I was like, what garbage, not an improvement, a little bit more watchable, but it has gotten better the more I thought about it. And take some time to process. It is, truly a mixed bag. What I think it has some solid technical aspects. I think it's, has some beautiful visuals. There's some great shots here. But the plot and the script are pretty abysmal. I don't necessarily mind where it ends up, but I don't like the way that it gets there. Overall, it's not a good movie. It is much more watchable than Jurassic World. But I will admit that I may be doing the thing I complained about with The Last Jedi, and that it kind of went a different direction in the franchise, so I don't like it. But the difference for me is that this isn't a good movie independent of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with basically everything you said. I had very low expectations for this film going into the theater because of how we just talked about our opinion on Jurassic World. Not great. But this movie didn't meet those expectations in different ways, though. It wasn't so much a quality expectation as, I mean, I do think that this movie is not good. But I think it was more of, like you said, like the content. This movie is weird. Like, it goes in so many weird directions that I was not expecting, that I like where it's going, but I don't like how it got there, or I don't think it deserved it, or it didn't go far enough in that direction. And I think that's my biggest complaint about this film, is that it is just like trying to do so many things that are so different that all feel half-assed.
Yeah, so it's like Trevorrow and what's the guy that he works with? Donnelly, is that right? I can't remember the co-writer.
Yeah, I don't know off the top of my head.
J.A. Bayona. It's like they had, and maybe I know some of these ideas were Spielberg's too, because he's a producer and was involved in pre-production. It's like they had all of these ideas and they used all of them. Like everything they put on the board in the writer's room or in the brainstorming sessions, they used all of the ideas. And I think the best parallel I can come up with this is like the good version of this is the Planet of the Apes films, the most recent trilogy. Mm-hmm. They're very similar in the arc that they're in, where they're heading, I think. The Planet of the Apes kind of told you up front what was happening, and this one doesn't, but we're going in the same direction. The problem is that the Planet of the Apes took the time to build the world and sell you on a logical way of getting there. Mm-hmm. This is just, I know Cam would really hate this because he talks about this all the time, but this is just bad decision on dumb decision over and over again. And those are my story and plot problems. We'll definitely get into specifics, but generally those are the issues.
I 100% agree with you of just like stupidity after stupidity of like no explanation. We're basically breaking the laws of physics every minute on screen. Like so many things are happening that make no sense. We'll get into that later. I will say like a lot of my theater enjoyed this movie, and that kind of bums me out.
The people in my theater were very happy when bad guys got eaten. Very happy.
Yeah. And here's the thing is like, this is a simple movie. And so if you have very low expectations and want like a weird mix of Jurassic Park / gothic horror and like Chris Pratt's in it. So
also
like, I guess that's good.
Like Day After Tomorrow, disaster porn kind of.
Yeah. Like if that's your jam or whatever, like go see this movie, I guess. I think there are some redeeming qualities and there are good ideas in this film. Like there are little nuggets that I think could have been really interesting. What I will say I will give this film credit, and this is that this basically opens up the entire world of possibilities. This like pushed the franchise over the cliff, kind of like how Last Jedi did. I mean, if we're in a whole new world now.
Yeah, there's a whole lot that can happen.
Yeah, which is exciting.
Most of it's bad.
I like how we got there. I will say, like, I was not a fan of this film, but I'm somewhat intrigued to see where the next film goes, but I also don't really care anymore. So there's that.
Yeah, there's pretty high potential that the third one of these ends up being by far the best.
Yeah, it really could be, and God, I hope so, because they have been bad.
Oh, yeah. So I guess before we get into spoilers, let me just say, if you were expecting a lot of Jeff Goldblum because you saw his name in the credits, there's not enough of him.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
that's a big bummer.
Yeah, that's a good warning for all you Jeff Goldblumites out there. Don't see this just for Jeff Goldblum. You will be let down. So let's go ahead and hop into spoilers. I think for me, my biggest complaint, and that's, we've kind of talked about it so far, but we can kind of get more into details here, is that this movie just makes no sense. Like the actions of the characters, geography and time and space itself. Like, is Owen Grady a superhero, and can they be invisible? Because they, like, on that ship, they should have been found so many times. And based on my rough geographical calculations, it would have taken them like 5 days to get back on that boat if we're like at least somewhat in the realm of real geography.
Yeah, I think I would say, yeah, from Costa Rica to Northern California is probably best case 3-4 days.
And they are being so loud. And you tell me they don't get found on this boat. I mean, that's we
also
we need
wouldn't
to,
there
we
be
need
a
to
significant a significant portion. Now I know they kind of direct your attention away as soon as they get on the boat. You have the heartbreaking shot of the Brachiosaurus on the dock.
Yeah,
which is the most emotional part of this entire movie.
Seriously,
that's, oh man, it's like you left your dog behind or something.
Yeah,
man, that was tough.
That was tough,
but. But that kind of directs your attention away, I guess. But, like, wouldn't it be obvious that this one truck got on after the boat was already gone?
At 65 miles an hour.
Also, several things here. I hate it when people do this, so I don't want to do this too much. But that truck weighs, like, 12,000 pounds and definitely needs more space than that to get up to 65 miles an hour.
So, and
definitely can't make a jump of any kind.
No.
That thing is way too heavy.
Yeah. Okay. So
anyway,
let's start back towards the beginning of the film. For me, this movie felt off like within the first scene, like the first 10 minutes even feels so awkward. Everyone, you can tell like everyone is phoning it in and it's just like trope after trope, after archetype, after archetype. It is the first 10 minutes. I was like, oh God. Oh no. This is bad.
Yep.
This is going to be bad.
Yep. I could have told you from the very beginning that Franklin and Zia are just roles. They aren't characters.
Yeah, absolutely. Like literally you could have put any person in that role and they would have been able to do exactly what that character is doing. And
And my big thing with Claire being in charge of the dinosaur protection group is, so they go to pretty strong lengths in Jurassic World to tell you that Claire doesn't really care about the dinosaurs whatsoever.
Yeah.
And so what we're thinking is that because she accidentally sort of falls in love with Owen in a fear bonding situation and her park that she's in charge of is completely overrun by the insane wild animals that she's keeping under lock and key and in some cases torturing. Those things are to lead us to believe that she is in charge of the world's preeminent lobbying group in order to protect them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she should be in prison.
What?
That's where she should be.
Right? There's like some definite criminal negligence going on at some level there.
Yeah, like there's just from the first 5 minutes of this movie, I was just like, well, this already doesn't make sense. I can tell nobody wants to be here except for the paycheck. It just felt so off from the first scene, which that first scene was like kind of cool. Do you even remember the first scene?
Yeah, the underwater when they were getting the bone of the
the
Indominus Rex.
Forgot what the first scene was until like 5 minutes ago. That's how forgettable this movie was for me. But yeah, like I guess it's an interesting setup of Jurassic World was a disaster. But are you really gonna tell me that like the military didn't go in and clean up the mess or like take out the dinosaurs or something? I don't know. I'm nitpicking, but this film invites nitpickiness. So there's that.
Yeah. I don't even know where. Oh, we're kind of at the beginning. So when Claire goes to visit Lockwood, has Lockwood been mentioned at all before in the series?
Dude, who is he?
He's confused. He's apparently John Hammond's former partner.
Okay.
Hammond bailed on him when Lockwood wanted to try the genetic cloning stuff on humans.
Okay. Yeah. They act like we should know a lot of people in this movie that it's been a while since I'd seen the other Jurassic Park movies, but I just rewatched Jurassic Park like a month ago.
I don't think Lockwood is mentioned.
Okay.
But so Lockwood says this thing where he said, Hammond never wanted us to be there with the dinosaurs. He thought they should be on his own.
Mm-hmm.
That's like a very weird attempt at retconning something, because Hammond was pretty clearly trying to be Walt Disney in Jurassic Park.
Oh yeah.
That's like exactly what he was doing.
Yeah.
So that's another bizarre thing that from the very beginning, I was just like, what?
What is happening?
Though I will say the direction of human cloning is a logical place for the series to go.
Mm-hmm.
And a question that, I mean, it's a question that's begged once you really start thinking about the science that's going on here.
Yeah. So let's hop in that direction really quick. So, in this movie, you have, this child actress who's playing, Maisie Lockwood, the granddaughter of, is it John Lockwood? The old guy Lockwood? Old guy Lockwood. That's what we'll call him.
I don't know.
The owner of this ridiculous mansion in the middle of these woods. And this little girl, she is
Benjamin Lockwood.
I'm still going to call him Old Man Lockwood. And he lives in this ridiculous mansion with his daughter and his caretaker. And well, his granddaughter, but I just spoiled it. His granddaughter, his caretaker, and his like executor, his like protege, whatever Mills is. Mills is running his foundation.
His foundation runner, yeah, whatever that is,
basically. And they allude that Lockwood's actual daughter was killed, but he couldn't handle the grief, and so he cloned his daughter to now be his quote granddaughter, and it's a perfect
right, but only like 9 years ago.
Yeah,
and so it apparently took a while to transition the technology over to humans.
And the landing of this moment is just like totally blown past. There, it's just so like, she's a clone. Here comes the T-Rex. Like,
yeah.
This should be like
said in such like an accusatory way.
Yeah.
It was said like she doesn't count as a person because she's a clone. That's the reveal.
Yeah, which like what? that in itself is an interesting question for Jurassic Park, because a lot of people are talking about, do these animals have rights? And that's an interesting question. Are they animals or are they clones? Do clones have rights? I don't know. Human cloning. Whoa, Jurassic Park, human cloning. This itself should be a movie, but nope, it's just like, she's a clone. He just got eaten by a velociraptor. Like, it's so just like blown past. And that's basically the summary of this entire film, is that it's just like little nugget of a good idea here and it's gone. Little nugget of an idea here and it's gone. And there's just so many things forced into this film. Kind of like you said, of like, it's as if everything in the writing room made it in the script.
Yeah. Even if they just like wanted to mention it or have a glimpse of it.
Yeah. I mean, it was so quick. And I think that, I don't know. I feel like I've been talking a lot. Trevor, do you have any points to make?
Let me run down my quick, this is just what I could remember, my list of people making dumb decisions. So when Claire and Franklin get locked in the radio base, the lights go out and there are very clearly skylights and they don't think to go up until they have no other options. That seems pretty clear, like obvious to me. When they find the gyro car, Owen like intentionally waits a second to get in so that he can be chased around outside of it.
Also, like if a volcano's erupting, volcanoes erupt at like supersonic speeds, like so fast. Lava flows at like 50 miles an hour. I'm just saying, Chris Pratt is a superhero in this movie.
Yeah, he is. Also, the time when he Batman style punches out seven bad guys in a row.
It like, jumps through a T-Rex's mouth.
Yeah.
Ugh.
That's yeah. And then I don't necessarily mean to skip all the way to the end. But the dumb decisions of all the dumb decisions is, why are we letting the 10-year-old let all the dinosaurs out? What? Like, I actually thought we were finally like, someone besides Ian Malcolm in this series was going to make the right decision.
Yeah.
And
what sucks is that moment was the only moment in the movie besides the dying brachiosaur or whatever it was on the dock. Uh-huh. That was the only part of the film that had emotional weight for me.
Yeah, it was the way crap. Like Bryce Dallas Howard and Chris Pratt, I did not do a good job in this movie overall, but they mm-hmm. played that well.
That moment like actually had weight, and I was actually like really happy of like, oh my gosh, they're making a smart decision. This is what smart people would do. But nope. Right? Like they had to immediately be like, and all that emotion is ruined. Now there are dinosaurs in the world again.
Just because this 10-year-old loves dinosaurs. So the way that, so what, I guess in some ways, what Planet of the Apes does better than Jurassic World in building its world is intent. So this pretty clearly happens on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it's not nearly as compelling to me. I think if something happens where this sequence of events goes a little differently and the dinosaurs get out on accident, then that's a completely different set of circumstances.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's weird in that, like, that's a great way to put it, is that everyone is making choices that lead to this, and every choice was like the wrong choice. And so you don't feel sympathy for anybody that's doing anything on screen.
Right. No. Yeah. Yeah. That's, I agree. I don't even feel that much sympathy for the dinosaurs either, which I think is maybe the biggest reason why this particular story doesn't work for me,
mm-hmm.
because I am 100% behind Ian Malcolm's statement that he's giving at the beginning of the film.
Absolutely.
Like, dinosaurs are cool, but all of our evidence shows that the only option we have is to let them die. Like, that's the only option.
Yeah.
Like, they were here before us, and if we're not careful, they're going to be here after us. That's exactly correct.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, it makes no sense. So many of the decisions that are happening here make no sense. And all of the characters making them, there's no redeeming qualities in any of them. Like, the bad guys are just your typical bad guys. Mills is infuriatingly archetypal. That's not a word. Stereotypical, archetypical, whatever. He's a character. Like, he's not playing a person. He's playing a character, which I understand. Yeah. It's like, it's a movie. They are characters, but like, I want my characters to be more than just one dimension, you know?
This is like a Mission Impossible movie with dinosaurs.
Yeah. Yeah. It,
right down to my favorite ridiculous part of this is the dinosaur auction. And
okay. Are you telling
that
me
whole,
that for that $10 million, I can buy a dinosaur? Yeah, is that really? That's how cheap dinosaurs are going?
See, it seemed really low to me also.
You can buy, okay, guess how much like a fossil from a museum costs?
I don't know. I have no idea.
Like, a giant fossil at a museum costs like $9 million. So you're telling me for an extra mil, I can...
I mean, I don't... Yeah. Man, the whole thing with like the room that's like set up to be like all perfectly bad guy auction housey, and it's like something, that specific sequence was like something I would have expected from The Incredibles. Mm-hmm.
And all of this is happening underneath this house that no one has figured out.
And the third sub-basement, which, by the way, the dumbwaiter, for some reason, goes all the way down.
It's only protected by a 4-number PIN code. Just so many little... stupid things. And
when he said we're bringing them all here, I was like, come again?
you don't have another facility somewhere
at least in the Lost World they like built a zoo, you know, like a holding facility. Mm-hmm. Like a stadium and everything. Yeah.
my other big complaint is that apparently dinosaurs cry now. Did you see the tear coming out of out of Blue's eye. I'm not saying that.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that velociraptors weren't intelligent, because apparently they were quite intelligent. But I will say this. I have friends that have like giant pet lizards and stuff. They have no emotional connection to you as a person. Okay? Like my dog, I think loves me, but mostly because I give her food and pets. So I think that's like the extent of our emotional relationship. And so you're telling me that this velociraptor knows who you are and is going to cry, and then it's going to come and save your life like 17 different times in this movie. It's just, and also, can we stop with like the convenient T-Rex biting you like from just out of frame?
Dude, the T-Rex is the hero of Jurassic Park every time.
Okay, here's my biggest frustration with the T-Rex thing. The T-Rex was introduced in Jurassic Park by one of the greatest buildups in cinema. The loud boom, the music, the ripple of the water.
The glass of water.
The trees shaking. The goat disappeared. Like, you hear its presence coming because it's a T-freaking Rex. And then every other moment in all of the Jurassic Park movies, it's just like, gotcha. Like, you didn't hear me coming.
You don't. The genius of the way Spielberg did it is you don't have to even know what a T-Rex is or looks like to be scared. Like, you know to be scared because of what's happening.
And I think that's my biggest, I mean, I think I've said that's my biggest complaint like 17 different times. But what's frustrating about this movie and basically all Jurassic Park movies except for Jurassic Park 1 is that Jurassic Park in itself was not designed to have a sequel. And especially...
Right. This isn't supposed to be a world.
Especially these kind of sequels. And what's weird is like expanding franchises through larger spectacle and a world fatigued by spectacle makes no sense, but that's what studios keep doing. Like, the original Jurassic Park...
This movie is going to make $1 billion.
Which is
also
infuriating. The original Jurassic Park spectacle worked because it was novel. It was the first. And like, we don't care anymore. We've seen a transformer fly on a relic dragon with a sword kill another transformer on an earth that was merging with another earth. And I literally couldn't care less. Like, when that happened, I was like, I hate this. And so like, why do we keep feeling like making bigger spectacle is going to make a better movie? It is not. And
That's the thing that Spielberg, even because The Lost World is even like this, the thing that Spielberg got about this franchise that everyone else didn't or doesn't seem to is that it's about the people, not the dinosaurs.
And
this movie is about the dinosaurs.
Yes and no. Like, it is, but it isn't. It's just about trying to make something that will be kind of scary and make money. That's what it feels like to me. And the disregard for life and death in a film that's all about breaking laws of life and death, I guess technically makes sense, but like in the world of Jurassic Park is infuriating because in the first film only like two people die. And it that in itself makes the stakes feel so heavy. Like, I bet like 40 deaths on screen in this film and an entire island's worth of dinosaurs died in this movie. But like, I didn't care. And
including like every bad guy we know by name gets eaten.
I didn't care, even though the music is telling me to care, but the movie doesn't care, so I don't care. And the scariest part about Jurassic Park 1, and also, you know, Jurassic Park 3 too, to its credit, is that they're stuck on an island with dinosaurs. And like, the smaller the space and the smaller number of players on the field, the more intimate and scarier the film is. And this movie and Jurassic World did not abide by that. It was a ton of people, a lot of players, a lot of deaths, and no weight, no intimacy. We don't even spend a ton of like time. We don't spend barely any time watching our main characters interact with each other. There is like no character development or plot in this film regarding characters working together, interacting with each other, growing as characters, learning about each other. Like, it's just all, like you said, fear bonding.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It's, yeah. I like, and the way that the relationship between Owen and Claire is addressed is so ridiculous,
mm-hmm.
that it was awful. Just all of it.
It really was awful.
So let's talk for a few minutes about the good things in this movie, because there are some good things.
Yeah, I agree.
I think for the most part, this is a technically good movie.
Mm-hmm.
I think that Bayona does a good job of directing a lot of things and directing some camera moves. I think that you can feel his experience that he has with horror film.
Mm-hmm.
I think especially the stuff that takes place at the Lockwood estate has a really strong horror aesthetic,
mm-hmm.
that serves it well.
I definitely agree. I think the cinematography here might be some of the best in the series. I do wish that it was more in that 2-to-1 aspect ratio that Steven Spielberg shot the original Jurassic Park in, to show the scale of dinosaurs compared to humans. This is very, like, quote, and I use quote heavily sarcastically, cinematic. Because it feels like now shooting things wider or putting black bars on your YouTube video now makes you cinematic. when there's no real intention or understanding of what you're doing. And so that's what I loved about Jurassic Park, is it was shot in 2-to-1, which is very close to 16:9, obviously. And it gives you that scale, that reference point of human to dinosaur. This doesn't feel like a good use of super wide.
Yeah.
But the lighting and the camera movement and the storytelling with camera work is actually really good.
And it's a massive improvement over Jurassic World.
Absolutely.
Just like night and day. Also, I think they did a pretty good job with art direction and set construction here.
Mm-hmm.
The estate exterior and interiors and the estate roof, those are all sets.
Mm.
That's not a location. So that's very impressive to me.
Mm-hmm.
Those were great. The boat interior was actually a set as well.
Hmm.
And the boat exterior, complete CGI by ILM, which hats off to those guys, because it looked really good.
They're the best.
They are.
In the business.
I mean, I thought the dinosaurs were almost uniformly great. There were a few bits here and there that weren't perfect. I think my favorite set piece is the tranquilized T-Rex.
Hmm. Okay.
And it's the realest experience we see with a dinosaur because it's real. It's an animatronic T-Rex head and shoulders, and it moves. And it's not like, you know, to me anyway, when you see like Owen reaching out to touch Blue, there's just something that doesn't look quite right.
Mm-hmm.
But that scene with Owen and Claire and the T-Rex, and they're trying to get some blood from it, that I think is visually a pretty strong thing, even though it's a kind of confined space. But the T-Rex in that, I think, just looks great.
Yeah, I felt like they did a good job of like figuring out the skin textures in those more intimate environments with the dinosaurs. I agree with you that a lot of the wider stuff or interactions with Blue or those felt a little off to me as well.
Yeah. And I do think there's also, and credit the director for this, among other people, of course, but I think there's a good meshing of CGI and animatronics as needed too. I don't feel like I was really taken off guard from switching from close-ups to wide shots. I mean, like I said, I know there are some wide shots that weren't great, but I think of like the scene with the Indoraptor in the cage.
Mm-hmm.
I think some of that was animatronic in the close-ups.
Mm.
So I think that stuff looks pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm always a fan of using animatronic over CGI when possible.
Right. Right.
So, I mean, do you have any other thoughts on this movie? I
mean,
I don't want us to just like poop on this movie
I know,
over
right?
and over.
I am glad to see Toby Jones being the role that he always plays as an eccentric, amoral moneymaker. So, you know, just doing his thing, like in Sherlock and in the Marvel Universe. You know, just always the guy who's kind of lurking around.
Yeah, he
doing bad things.
When it cut to him, I was like, of course.
Right.
Of course it's him.
Yep.
It's always that guy.
Last thing we need to talk about is the post-credit scene. Did you stay for the post-credit scene?
I did not. I was over it.
So I heard there was a post-credit scene. I didn't want to know anymore, so I didn't read about it. I wish I had because it's 4 seconds long. And it is, if you guys didn't see it, it's a bunch of pterodactyls flying around the Las Vegas Strip and resting on the Eiffel Tower at Paris, at Las Vegas, not the actual Eiffel Tower. Which is misleading because they open the shot close in on the top of the Eiffel Tower. So you think, oh man, they're all the way around the country or they're around the world. But nope, they just made it to Las Vegas so far. So most of the world's still in the clear.
And that means the next film is going to be called Jurassic World Hangover 4.
I was sort of hoping it would be Jurassic World Fast and Furious.
Yes. Oh, I would see that too. Owen and a Velociraptor versus the fam.
This universe has now crossed into that realm of movie.
Yeah. And it's like the frustrating thing is it's like if you're gonna go there, go all the way there. Like I feel like it's trying to be this weird. We're kind of still doing Jurassic Park or kind of leaning into like superhero James Bond, Mission Impossible, like Fast and Furious. And you can't make a good movie if you're like in between those. I feel like you either have to be a serious Jurassic Park movie or like lean into the campiness like Fast and the Furious did. Like they were like, oh, wow, this is what we are. And they leaned into it. And those movies are great. And not number eight. Number eight was bad. but yeah, they're pretty good.
So I guess just my final thoughts is just like a general meh. I think there's some good technical stuff here. I think it's generally watchable. The plot and the characters are bad to non-existent. And I mean, I guess props for keeping the T-Rex as the R2-D2 of the series. Just always coming through. When we need him. Her, sorry.
Oh,
always there
right.
When we need her.
That's right. Yeah. What's your grade on this, Trevor?
I'm giving this a 32.5 million out of 65 million years ago.
Mm. So that's a failing grade right there.
So just right kind of in the 50% range. I could maybe I don't want to crap on this too much, like we said, because there's some nuggets of goodness here, but it's just I'll probably never watch this movie again.
Yeah, I 100. This is a D for me. I'm not gonna go all the way F because, you know, there are glimmers of goodness here that didn't go where I want them to. But I think the seeds have been planted for something strong to potentially happen in the third film that they will inevitably make because these things are just printing money.
It's already happening.
Yeah,
Colin Trevorrow is directing.
Is. Of course it is. I mean, this is
2021.
Ugh, no,
3 years.
Please no. yeah, this is a D for me. I think overall, a disappointment. Obviously, there are some good ideas, but I think the biggest disappointment, is Chris Pratt and Bryce Dallas Howard. Like, just very little chemistry. Kind of felt like they were phoning it in most of the time. And I think it kind of goes to show your point of our last week's hot takes, Trevor. It is very accurate.
Yeah, Chris Pratt, love him so much, especially in Parks and Rec, but not a great actor.
Yeah, he has not a lot of range. And, you know, I would love to see him do something, you know, really strong in terms of like a drama. I would love to be surprised by him, but
yeah,
I feel like he's kind of showed what he can do. So, okay, well, that's our thoughts on Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom. Overall, we did not like it very much. but let's go ahead and hop into our content of the week. Trevor, what is your content of the week?
So I was trying to find some dinosaur content of the week, and I think the only like really good piece of pop culture I mean, books aside, that is about dinosaurs is Jurassic Park, the original film. I don't think anything else has done it well. So if you want to learn, if you like dinosaurs, then go to a museum and talk to a paleontologist.
Good recommend.
And right. Also, I have a music recommend. This is a cover by One Direction, who I'm not typically a fan of. For all the same reasons that most people are not typically a fan of. But they did a cover in the BBC Live Lounge of Torn, the 90s pop song made famous by Natalie Imbruglia. And it is oh so sweet with their four-part harmonies, and it's very nice. Will stay in your head forever. So check that out. I mean, so they were apparently made famous by this song when they were on The X Factor, but this is a newer version from just a couple years ago. But check out Torn by One Direction. I listened to it multiple times in a row when I found it. So
wow.
No judgment.
Wow. Surprising. Okay. Awesome. I'll have to check that out. My recommend this week, I have three quick recommends for you. Rafe Spall is the guy who plays this bad guy, Mills, in Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom. And while his character and performance were pretty terrible, he is a fantastic actor. He stars in one of my favorite movies of the last few years, The Big Short. So if you haven't seen that, definitely check that out. And then he's in this little gem of a horror movie that's on Netflix called The Ritual. And it is terrifying. And he gives a fantastic performance. It's one of those films where it was like, I turned it on, the trailer looked a little cheesy, a little hokey. I was like, this is your typical horror movie. I'm watching it. I'm like, oh, what's this about? And within the first 5 minutes, you're like, holy crap, this is not what I expected. And then within the first 30 minutes, you're like, oh my gosh, I'm so scared. This is so good. So if you like good horror, check out The Ritual. It's awesome. And then my final recommend, my wife and I just totally binged the newest season of Drunk History on Hulu. And this is one of the most enjoyable shows on television. If you don't know the premise, basically comedians get really drunk and then tell famous or not so famous stories of history. And then a lot of actors get together and act it out and like dub or like mouth sync what the drunk person is saying, and it is hysterical and informative and very entertaining. So yeah, check out Drunk History. It's really entertaining. Would highly recommend it. So that's our show this week. Cameron has a little thing that he says here that he has memorized, and I definitely don't, but basically, if you like us, review us on iTunes. That would be fantastic. Recommend us to a friend. And if you want to hear more about us or, find out more or whatever the kids are saying,
or if you
want to
sponsor, if you want to sponsor us.
Oh, whoa. I mean, sure.
Tweet us, email us.
Yeah, sure. Why not? We're on
Twitter. We would take sponsorship for what, $30 a month? Would that cover it?
I guess, yeah, I'm down. we'll say whatever you want us to say. Just give us your money. I'm just kidding. We have at least some integrity. But yeah, we're on Twitter, we're on Facebook, we have a website, heyo. Just Popcorn Optional everywhere. That's who we are. Trevor, where can we find you online?
I'm on Twitter and Instagram at TurboTrevor.
Awesome. And my name is Jake Brown. You can find me on Instagram at jakebrown.tv, or you can check out my website at jakebrown.tv. That was not a misstatement. They are the same thing. Don't ask me how it works. It just does. Okay. That's all we have this week, and we will see you next week. What are we seeing next week? Do we know?
I believe it is Sicario, Day of the Soldado.
We will be back next week with a review of Sicario 2, Day of the Soldado. It's a hard title to say. We'll see if that impacts the box office. Well, until then, in the words of Michael Scott, we'll see you ASAP as possible. Is that what he says?
Yep. In the words of the great Michael Scott, we'll be back ASAP as possible.
That's what it is. Sure. Okay. Well, bye.
Later.